Driver, we're clear.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the first episode of The Florida Project of 2022. It's the podcast where Disney fans celebrate Walt Disney World. If you like Disney and you like podcasts, you will probably like The Florida Project. I'm Jason. As always, next to me is Michael.
Hello, hello.
And Will is not here this week. He is off this week, and he called in to let us know why.
I was running.
That's right. He is at Marathon Weekend. It's Marathon Weekend, right?
Yep.
At Disney World, and we'll be back next week. If you'd like to support the show, get access to some awesome bonus content, get some cool real-world stuff, and even chat with us when you're bored at work, become one of our Patreon saints at patreon.com/TFP podcast. Each week on TFP Extra, we keep the podcast train rolling with more zany fun, the airing of grievances, and a topic that may or may not be Disney-related. This week, we'll be talking about New Year's superstitions.
Ew.
Yeah. If you're a fan of the nonsense parts of the Florida Project, you will love TFP Extra.
Extra.
In addition to TFP Extra, our Patreon saints get access to our ongoing Disney Classics series, where we discuss each of Disney's animated classic films. Our next animated Disney classic, releasing sometime this month, will be...
Will's favorite. Fantasia.
Woohoo! Patreons who contribute just $5 get the additional shows and an invite to the TFP Slack channel. There you can chat with us, participate in watch-alongs, and engage in fun, freewheeling discussions. It's like a nonstop episode of TFP Extra.
Extra!
I wonder if we should just combine both of the Fantasias.
No, they're completely different films.
A Fantasia. Completely different?
Completely different. Except for one segment.
Like an ultimate edition.
No, I watched the... Pomp and Circumstances segment from Fantasia 2000 last night with Donald and Daisy. It is delightful. And I think whenever I saw that for the first time, that was when I fell in love with Donald and Daisy.
Oh, all right. Additional levels and rewards are all on the Patreon site. So sign up at patreon.com/TFP podcast today and get more of The Florida Project. In this episode, we'll discuss some nonsense and small topics. Michael will give us the latest news and take us on a trip down Main Tweet USA. And then we'll look at the top attraction queues at Walt Disney World. All of that and much more is coming up on this week's episode of The Florida Project.
It's a small
topic.
After all, it's a small
topic.
After all, it's a small
topic.
After all, it's a small
topics. All right. So welcome back. First episode of the year.
Yeah, it seems like it's been a long time since we recorded.
Yeah, we had a nice break this time.
Yeah.
Anything of note happen on the break that you'd like to talk about?
I redid my office.
You did, and it looked great.
I got new office furniture and a TV and a new chair and basically redecorated my entire office. So that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
My mom was up here, so she helped me do it. And Jason helped me do it. He did all the... anything that required holes in the wall, because that stresses me out.
Yeah.
Then
I have some power.
Yep.
And a network cable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I was very happy with the way it turned out. And yeah, it was a good holiday, a good Christmas with family. A low-key New Year's, but also a good New Year's. We stayed safe.
We did. I made Chinese food, homemade Chinese food.
It was very good.
It was very good. And then I made it till about 11:15. Before going to bed to read and fell asleep, but Michael came in and woke me up at midnight, so all was well.
That's become our new tradition when we're not at a party.
Mm-hmm.
Jason will fall asleep, but then I'll wake him up.
Yep. All right, well, it's good to be back. Hopefully you guys had a good break and are ready for some super awesome content in the next year.
Yeah, that's the dream.
Yeah. All right. One thing that we found out over the break is that my family adheres to a lot of the traditional New Year's superstitions. So, like, an example is eating peas and greens on New Year's Day for money and good luck throughout the year. We'll talk about those more in the extra, but in honor of the first show of the year, I thought it would be fun to come up with some Disney World New Year superstitions. So, If you were an ancient being in charge of developing superstitions, what would you create for things to do at Disney World and things you can do if you're not at Disney World to set the tone for the year? So, for an example, one of them would be don't eat a pretzel on New Year's Day because it'll make you salty about Disney World.
I like it.
Okay. You got any ideas?
Yeah, I was thinking if you ever visit Epcot during the year, you must go on Spaceship Earth and Living with the Land. If you don't, you'll lose the ability to communicate and you won't grow at all.
Oh, that's good.
So
that's good.
Keep that in mind next time you're at Epcot.
I would say one could be if you're in the park, get in line for the first attraction you see so you don't spend the whole year going, well, I don't know. What do you want to do? What do you want to do next? I don't know. What do you want to do?
Yeah, that's a good
be
one.
Be decisive.
Yeah. Just enjoy your time.
Mm-hmm. What else? Any you could do at home to set the mood for your Disney year? Book a trip.
Well, yeah, book a trip. But also, I don't know, listen to a Disney podcast.
Yep. Listen to the Florida Project or your aunt will die.
Oh, no, that's not true.
Some of those superstitions are like that. Like a lot of them are if you do X, someone will die.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah.
How about instead on New Year's Eve, you watch the live stream of, what is it, Fantasy in the Sky, fireworks? Mm-hmm. That's a good mood setter for the year. Because even if you don't have a Disney trip planned, it's like you're there.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Watch some Disney
spectaculars.
Yeah. All right. And that's it for small topics.
Thanks, Jason. Those were some succinct small topics. News. Here are three news items to discuss this week about Walt Disney World. And actually, they're mostly all about Epcot. So number one, standby line coming to Remy's Ratatouille Adventure at Epcot. So starting this week on January 10th, Remy's Ratatouille Adventure at the Expanded France Pavilion will discontinue the use of the virtual queue and replace it with a standby line. However, the attraction will not be added as a standard Genie Plus Lightning Lane, but will still have the individual Lightning Lane purchase option. This now means there are no Walt Disney World attractions using the virtual queue system, though Disney says, quote, virtual queues continue to be helpful with the launch of popular attractions and the debut of new experiences and offerings, so we may use it again from time to time for select attractions in the future, end quote. So it would seem very likely that we will see virtual queues deployed for the upcoming openings of Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind and Tron Light Cycle Run.
Yep. I think that's, I think it's good. I think it helps with the customer experience, especially for people who, you know, like, if you're really excited about going to Star Wars Land, but you're not staying on property, you're in Florida and you don't know that you have to get a virtual queue for something, then you kind of miss out. And you don't even, like, you don't have the opportunity to be like, well, this is the only thing I want to do today, so I will stand in line for 12 hours if I need to. Like, it kind of takes that choice away.
Yeah, and also with Remy's Ratatouille Adventure, you know, it's going away much quicker than it did for Rise of the Resistance. Mm-hmm. But it's also less of an attraction. Like,
yep,
it's less popular. It's been around for years because it exists in Disneyland Paris. So it doesn't have a lot of the technical issues that Rise of the Resistance has, even, you know, a year or two after it's
opened. Somebody in the Slack made the point that it was like ready months before it opened. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really the pandemic that just delayed actual opening. So it makes sense that they would decide on an attraction by attraction basis when and if to use the virtual queue. And now with Genie Plus and Lightning Lanes, like it's probably also a factor because they have a lot more insight as to what people are willing to wait for.
Yep.
Or spend money to wait for and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think definitely it'll be around at Tron and Guardians of the Galaxy for a good amount of time. Maybe not as long as Rise of the Resistance, but I think for a while.
And speaking about Lightning Lanes, the Disney Genie Lightning Lane attractions have reverted back to their pre-holiday peak lineup. So between December 19th, 2021 and January 3rd, 2022, Expedition Everest, Legend of the Forbidden Mountain, Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway, Frozen Ever After, and Space Mountain were included via Disney Genie Plus service and were not available as an individual Lightning Lane selections like they were before. So these attractions have now been moved back to individual Lightning Lane purchase and are not included with the Genie Plus standard subscription. However, with Expedition Everest now closed for refurbishment, Avatar Flight of Passage is the only attraction available for individual purchase at Disney's Animal Kingdom.
That's very interesting. I wonder why they moved them back.
Well, I think they only moved it because it was peak and they wanted more people to move through those attractions. So yeah, taking off the individual purchase, you know, and making them part of the Disney Genie lineup, I think helped with the flow.
Did you know that family travel has the incredible power to shape our children's worldview and create lasting memories? In a world where representation is often lacking, it's essential for our children to see themselves reflected in every aspect of life, including the stories we tell about travel. Introducing the Travel of Legacy podcast, where we're rewriting the script by celebrating the diverse voices of Black and Brown family travelers. Each episode of Travel of Legacy is a testament to the enriching power and the joy of exploration in Black and Brown communities. So journey with us and subscribe now.
Yeah, I bet it probably helped with customer complaints too. Like, you know, if there's more stuff, like you can see why Flight of Passage, Rise of Resistance are individual Lightning Lanes. But if you're like, why is Frozen Ever After? It's a C or D ticket at best. Why is that? Why do I have to pay $20 for that or whatever? I could see it.
Yeah. All right. Number two, Full Menu is now available for the 2022 Epcot International Festival of the Arts.
Ooh.
So the 2022 Epcot International Festival of the Arts gets underway later this week on January 14th and runs through February 21st. And Disney has today released the full menus for the 15 food kiosks. And there's a new kiosk, the Craftsman Courtyard, featuring cast iron roasted PEI mussels and steelhead trout. The other kiosks are Pop Eats, The Deconstructed Dish, Deco Delights, Refreshment Outpost, all of those are near Port of Entry, the Pastoral Palette in Germany, the Artist Table in America, Tangerine Cafe Flavors of the Medina in Morocco, Vibrante and Vivido in Canto Cochina between Morocco and France, Gourmet Landscapes in Canada, the Donut Box near Test Track, L'Art de la Cuisine Française in France, El Artista Hambriento in Mexico, Koshiki in Japan, the Painted Panda in China, and L'Art de Mangiare in Italy. You can find the complete menus online. We're not going to go through them here. But it's a lot of the same food and beverage selections and prices from last year's festival.
Yep. Except for that trio of savory croissant donuts.
Yes, I did not see those.
That's the best thing that they had. I don't know why they got rid of it. It's a shame.
But what they did have, or what they are adding for this year's festival, is a new, wait for it, Figment popcorn bucket.
Woo-hoo!
Coming this week at Epcot, and it'll be limited to two per guest. So hopefully the eBayers won't get to them all first, that there'll still be some for the guests in the parks.
Yep.
But that's very exciting, because even all these years later, Figment is still a very popular character.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if people that get the popcorn buckets, do they put their microwave popcorn in them when they get home and eat it out of that?
I don't know, but that might be a New Year's superstition. If you eat your popcorn not in a Disney popcorn bucket, the next time you have popcorn at Disney, it's going to taste bad.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. It'll be burnt.
Yeah.
All your popcorn for the rest of the year will be burnt.
Yeah. So if you don't want burnt popcorn, buy a Disney popcorn bucket and use it all the time. All right. Number three, Voices of Liberty to move back inside the American Adventure Rotunda at Epcot. So Voice of Liberty, the beloved a cappella group, has been performing outdoors at the American Gardens Theater during various festivals since they returned after the start of the pandemic. But they are now returning to their real home inside the pre-show area / rotunda of the American Adventure. So by the time you hear this, they should already be there. The Voice of Liberty showtimes for the opening week are 12 p.m., 12:45, 1:30, 2:15, 3, 3:45, and 4:30 p.m. daily. So again, just a little bit getting somewhat back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
You can now see your Voices of Liberty where you used to be able to see them before the pandemic.
Yeah. those good acoustics that people always talk about.
Yeah.
People love those acoustics.
And you can just sit on the floor around them.
Yep. It's nicer to have a bench, though. Which I guess there are some benches in there you can sit on. And because of the acoustics, you can hear them anywhere.
Yeah. And just like the Voices of Liberty playing at the American Gardens Theater, that is it for news. Hopefully there'll be some more interesting news next week.
That's some good news, Michael.
Tweet. All right, this week on Main Tweet USA, we have two items. One quick one that just came out before we were recording. Disney and Pixar's Turning Red will stream exclusively on Disney Plus beginning March 11th, 2022. So Disney has announced that the latest film from Disney Pixar, Turning Red, will go straight to Disney Plus on March 11th instead of theaters as originally planned. This will be the third Pixar film in a row to go exclusively to streaming since the pandemic began after Soul and Luca. Onward went to streaming at the start of the pandemic, but was in theaters for a week or two before the initial shutdown. So, it's just bad timing on Pixar's part that there seems to be a spike in cases whenever they have a movie coming out.
Or, I mean, I also wonder if there's something like where people either aren't excited about it or Pixar hasn't really had a flop film that went to theaters. And I wonder if they're just trying to, they don't have a lot of faith, or maybe the audience testing wasn't all that great on some of these movies. And that's why they're putting them on Disney Plus. Like, I didn't like Luca all that much. Like, it was fine, but it was nothing to me.
Yeah.
And Soul was kind of weird.
I love Soul.
Yeah.
It could also be a fact that I just want to add some more, exciting content to Disney Plus to kind of get people to stay subscribed or stay interested. Because if you're not interested in a lot of like the shows, you know, you're just really just waiting for whatever the new movies are to show up on Disney Plus. So this kind of gives them like an extra thing to advertise that, hey, you can get this right away on Disney Plus. And you can't see it in the theater. So subscribe now.
Yeah. And that's apparently the Warner Brothers decision to do day and date on HBO Max of all the Warner movies, like it upset a bunch of your Hollywood elites, but apparently it drove a lot of subscriptions. Like a lot of people signed up for HBO Max because you could watch Mortal Kombat when it came out and you didn't have to go to the theater. So probably Dune was a bigger draw than Mortal Kombat, but other ones too.
Yeah. In the Heights.
Yep, In the Heights.
Well, if you're not familiar with Turning Red, it's set in Toronto between 2002 and 2003 for some reason. The film centers around Maylin May Lee, a confident 13-year-old Chinese-Canadian who is torn between staying her mother's dutiful daughter and the chaos of adolescence. And as if changes to her interests, relationships, and body were not enough, whenever she gets too excited or stressed, she poofs into a giant red panda due to her ancestors' mystical connection with red pandas. Should be interesting.
Yeah, it's without a huge marketing push, I think this would be a real tough sell to get people to go to the theaters to watch. Especially, you know, we're kind of in a, if it's not IP or hasn't been around before.
Yeah, it's harder to get.
It's harder to get people in. So, like, Spider-Man made $1.5 billion, but Morbius ain't.
Encanto is doing really good.
Because it's a very good movie.
But it kind of had the same problem, not being an IP. But
yeah. But it had Lin-Manuel Miranda attached to it.
And it had good word of mouth once it came out, too. So.
Yep.
All right. Moving further down Main Tweet USA, our next item is actually about Encanto. The song We Don't Talk About Bruno is topping the song charts. So why didn't Disney submit it for an Oscar? So this is from Variety Magazine. Quote, We Don't Talk About Bruno from Disney's Encanto is a global sensation. Besides trending on social media, topping the music charts, and being played on repeat in every household with kids and unapologetic Disney adults, the music and the movie seem to be capturing the zeitgeist. So how does a sensation like Bruno not get submitted by Disney for Best Original Song for the upcoming Academy Awards? Hindsight is always 20/20 on what will strike a chord with audiences, especially for the Oscars. Encanto is Walt Disney Animation Studios' 60th feature and arguably one of its best. Emmy, Grammy, and Tony winner Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote 8 original songs for the film, including Dos Oruguitas, the emotional number that reveals the truth about the magical matriarch's tragic past, among the 15 songs shortlisted for the upcoming 94th Oscars. One significant factor is the Academy's deadline for song submissions was much to be completed by November 1st. At that point, the film hadn't opened in theaters yet and hadn't screened for critics. So without knowing how audiences will react, studios rely on gut checks and the passions of their talent to guide them. When it comes to Encanto, the shortlisted song Dos Oruguitas does open the tear ducts with audiences, and strategists may have felt that that was the safer bet. In addition to making the song shortlist, composer Germaine Franco, who became the first Latina admitted to the music branch in 2019, was among the 15 shortlisted names for original score. If nominated, she will be the first Latina and 7th female composer ever nominated. Encanto, which is directed by Jared Bush and Byron Howard and co-directed by Charisse Castro-Smith, is a box office success and doing great numbers on Disney+. Lauded by critics and audiences, the film is one of the frontrunners for Best Animated Feature, which could make co-producer Yvette Merino the first Latina nominated for the prize, end quote.
Yeah, this is, this was some interesting sort of inside baseball that I didn't know. And I would say, so on the album, there's a version of Dos Oruguitas that is called Two Oruguitas, and it's in English. And I feel like that's the one he wrote and then translated it into Spanish, because the English one rhymes and the Spanish one doesn't. So I think...
which one got nominated? The Spanish one?
The Spanish version.
Okay, good. Yep.
The I think...
It's prettier.
They did the opposite of what they did with Frozen 2 here, where for Dos Oruguitas, it works in the movie, like when you get the visuals and you sort of see the backstory, and it's a very emotional part of the movie, mm-hmm. of Abuela sort of her story of getting to the village and all that kind of stuff. But without the visuals, it's, you know, it's a good song, but not, to me, it didn't like, whatever, the English version did.
But, didn't it open your tear ducts?
Yes. But, and then we don't talk about Bruno is clearly like the earworm, the one that gets in your head, and the better song, I think. And I feel like it's kind of the opposite of what they did with Frozen 2, where Show Yourself was definitely the, like, it felt more like the Into the Unknown of Frozen 2, but they nominated that other, like they were banking on that other song to be the hit.
Oh, you mean Let It Go?
Yeah.
It was the Let It Go.
What did I say?
Into the Unknown, which was the one that was nominated.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It was the Let It Go of...
Yeah.
Yeah. But we don't talk about Bruno. Definitely an earworm. I love it. And I really wish... I think that if they had nominated that one, then Lin-Manuel Miranda would have gotten his EGOT. Definitely. Because all he needs is an Oscar now before he has... an Emmy, a Tony, a Grammy, and an Oscar. So he's just missing the Oscar. So now it's not so sure.
At least for Encanto, he could win for In the Heights or Tick, Tick, Boom, which were also released this year.
Yep. I'm surprised he didn't win anything for Mary Poppins Returns. So that had some good songs.
I don't think he wrote the songs for Mary Poppins Returns.
Oh, I thought he did.
Nah.
No. Okay.
It was the, I believe it was the composers that also wrote Rogers, the musical.
Oh.
Mark Shaiman.
Yep.
Maybe that'll be nominated. No, it wasn't a movie. Never mind. No. All right. And that's it for Main Tweet USA.
Excellent. What a lovely trip down the Main Tweet. Today's topic is, wait for it, top attraction queues at Walt Disney World. So we thought it would be fun. Michael came up with this idea and the great title of Wait For It, Attraction Queues at Walt Disney World. So we thought it would be fun to just talk about some of our favorite and least favorite queues in Disney World. Disclaimer, we have not yet experienced the Ratatouille queue in person, so it is not included in the rating, but apparently it's good.
Yeah. Will's experienced it, and I talked to him about it, but we decided not to include it since you and I had not actually experienced it, so it wouldn't be fair to include it in our list.
So do we want to go, do we want to do all the top, our favorite ones and then our least favorite ones? Or do we want to go back and forth? What do you think?
Let's go bottom first and then top.
Okay. End on a high note?
Yeah.
I like it.
And this is not top 10, it's just our top. So I think there's like
things
14.
That we like or don't like.
Yeah.
And why. All right. You pick one first.
All right. And this is in no particular order. The first one at the bottom of my list is an attraction I don't experience very much. And part of it is because of the queue, but the other part is because it's terrifying. Is the Astro Orbiter.
Yeah.
Because it has the queue, which is fine. It's just a standard queue, like under the People Mover station.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have to get in the elevator with a group of people. And then you have to go up to the top. And then you have to wait up there a little bit. So it just seems like...
It's a lot.
It's a lot just for, you know, a couple minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think a lot of the Tomorrowland attractions themselves have this kind of same problem where it's just like outside... In a regular back and forth queue, kind of an older queue, but
you know what it is?
What?
It's like Disneyland style queues.
Yeah.
A lot of those are outside and they're just kind of standard queues.
Yep. Yeah, they're definitely like jammed together because they don't have any space for anything. But yeah, Astro Orbiter, that elevator really sort of, I feel like it stops the momentum.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool, like, from, like, a theming, because it's like you're going up to the top of the mm-hmm. rocket to get on. But as just, like, a practical experience while you're waiting for an attraction, and especially nowadays, having to get into a cramped space with strangers.
Nobody likes that.
Kind of detracts from the experience.
Yep. Agreed. Let's see. Next up, we have the Jungle Cruise. So this one, again, it's just kind of a big room that's a little hot. The sun's blazing in on you. They have fans in there, but they're not great. They're not like the Avatar fans. The Avatar fans, those are the fans you want. But Jungle Cruise, and there's not a ton to look at. Like they have a couple of announcements here and there, but for the most part, it's just kind of a back and forth. You're in this hut.
Yeah, it has decent theming. Like it is themed.
Yeah, it is themed.
But this would be at the bottom of my list, mainly due because for whatever reason, it is one of the most inefficient queues, it seems like.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I think it has to do with boarding the boats, really. Because the queue is just, I mean, there's nothing special about it that would cause it to be slower. But like the last few years, the Jungle Cruise queue has just gotten longer and longer.
Mm-hmm.
And the Fast Pass queue when they had Fast Pass. And I haven't been on it with Genie Plus, so I'm not sure how it's changed since then. But sadly, the Jungle Cruise queue sometimes makes me not want to go on the Jungle Cruise,
yep.
even though I love the Jungle Cruise. So that's why it's at the bottom of my queue list.
That's definitely one that they could use another loading point, like a third or even fourth, and then have an unloading point somewhere else.
Right.
Because, you know, once it gets going, you know, you don't have to space them out that far from each other, really.
Yeah. And sometimes it moves fast. So it's just, maybe it's just a limit. It's based on how many boats are on the river at a time. And maybe,
yeah,
you know, maybe when we've gone, it hasn't been at full capacity or whatever.
Yeah.
So it is strange because it seems like it should stay pretty efficient, but in our experience, it has not.
Yeah. Agreed. Garbage.
All right. The next one at the bottom of our list is the Kilimanjaro Safari Queue. Now the attraction is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
The queue has some theming.
Mm-hmm.
But it is one of the most boring queues.
And it's so long.
It is so long. Whether there's a line or not, you're walking forever. But like the last few times, especially since COVID, since everything's been spaced out more, and even now since then, you go into sections of the queue that you didn't know exist back in the woods, and like it's just, or backstage even, and it's just, it's the longest walk. There's not much to look at. thankfully, most of it is shaded.
Yep.
So that part's good. And the good news is...
But they don't have the good fans there.
Right. But the good news is that it is a lengthy attraction that is most of the time worthy of the wait. Because that's the thing with like the queues. The queue is important not only for like getting people on the ride, but I think it's like a big factor in your overall experience at a theme park, because ultimately you're going to spend way more time in queues than mm-hmm. you will on the actual attractions. So the ones that kind of fit in with the attraction more, where they blend them better as far as theming or just the experience, kind of helps detract from the length that you're actually there. And honestly, the Kilimanjaro Safari queue doesn't do any of that.
Yeah.
For me.
Yep. I would agree. I'm not 100% sure on this, but I'm pretty sure it's larger than the Savannah part.
I don't think that's true. There's no way to know for sure.
There's no way to know for sure. All right. Next up, we have the land pavilion queues, Living with the Land and Soarin'. They're both just a lot of nothing. Right. Soarin' has the grand music, but other than that, it has
a lot of blue carpeting.
Yeah, a lot of blue carpeting.
Neon lights.
Odd-sized walls. And then after you get through the concourse-sized area and you go into the actual little load hallways, that's weird. Like, that, those areas always seem very weird to me, though.
Like, yeah, like the chain link fence.
Yeah.
And like, yes.
Just line up against this wall. We'll get you in there. Right.
Great attraction. Just, yeah. Yep. Weird. That being said, I don't really know what I would do differently with that, the Soarin' queue specifically, to make it different. I guess make it more like airport like or like,
yeah.
I mean, I know they try to. They have like the terminal signs and stuff. And
well, the one departures. At Disneyland has, it's like a terminal, right?
Yeah, it's like an old timey,
like a hangar.
Yeah, like a hangar, airplane hangar. Yeah.
And, you know, to be clear, we're not saying that they need to spend any money changing any of these queues. Like,
no,
spend the money where the people, like where the show is. Like, this is just a, you know, some of the queues are better than other ones.
Yeah. And the Living with the Land queue is fine, but it, you know, there's so much they could do with that, just with land and plants and mm-hmm. nature, to make it more interesting than just the back and forth. But thankfully, you're not usually waiting in that line too long. It's just interesting that both the attractions at the Land Pavilion kind of suffer from the same thing, while the pavilion itself is really beautiful, especially from the outside.
Yeah. It's too open.
It is too open. All right. The next one is the Tomorrowland Speedway, mostly because it's hot.
And smells.
And just back and forth.
Yeah.
And then you're like out exposed in the sun for like the last part of the queue.
Yeah. And you have to walk up those stairs to get over to the thing, which I'm not a fan of. I don't know why. I don't feel like there should be stairs in a queue. But.
Or is it a ramp? I can't remember now.
I don't know. I've never ridden it.
Oh. It's really fun to ride during an after hours event.
I doubt that.
It is. That's when last time I rode it. But yeah, there's not much to the Tomorrowland Speedway queue. Again, I don't know what they would do to make it any better. Because it's kind of theme like you're at a race, so you're in the stands basically. But yeah, it's just that whole area, the attraction and the queue, kind of suffer from the same thing. The smell. The sound.
Yeah. Next up could be a controversial one. A hot take, but Rise of the Resistance. I don't like that queue. And I'm not talking about, you know, the going into the other lands part of it. I'm talking about the both the outside and the inside part. So the outside part suffers from what a lot of our least favorite ones do. It's hot. There's not enough fan coverage and not enough shade. So once that grows in, that'll be better. But my main issue with the Rise of the Resistance queue is the opposite of what Flight of Passage did, where it is highly themed like Flight of Passage, but it is so small and narrow. And there are, I think somebody said like 12 rooms in there or something.
Something like that, yeah.
That you never know where you are in the queue. Like, right. You can't look ahead and be like, all right, well, I have to get through this whole room and into that lab. or whatever. Like you're
Because in Flight of Passage, you're like, okay, I'm in the cave part. I'm in the second cave part. I'm in the forest part. I'm in the lab part. You know, there's like distinct areas to the queue. So you kind of have like a mental countdown, basically.
Yeah.
You have, know, like, how close
guideposts. And each one of the big areas, cave one, cave two, the outside thing in the lab, and then even that loading area, which is just back and forth, you can see the whole thing. It's not like, you know, here's a hallway that goes for maybe 20 feet and then you don't know what's beyond that. Like it's just a, it makes it seem like it's a lot longer because you never have a goal really that you can achieve.
That being said, I think the theming works perfectly with the attraction. Like, I think what they've done with the queue, like, fits into the story and works really well. But, like, as an experience, I think also it's a little tainted by the fact by the time you get there, these days, you've probably waited a really long time already. So your mindset is like, come on, how many more of these rooms do we have to go through?
Even during the virtual queue time period, it's too narrow and closed in, and you just can't see anything. So you don't know where you are.
We did have a good experience in the Rise of the Resistance queue when one of the times it broke down, and was it Rey and Chewbacca came in to visit and took pictures with us, and they gave us popcorn, and that was nice.
Yeah.
That's why I think the Resistance is the winning team.
Yeah. Like, the theming's good, just the layout's bad to me. What's our next one?
Buzz Lightyear, Space Ranger Spin? Is that what it's called?
Yep.
Yeah, Space Ranger Spin. This suffers from, like we were talking about, kind of the Tomorrowland queue situation. The inside part's fine. It's cool. There's like a Buzz Lightyear.
I feel like they made the inside, like they did some sort of redo on the inside part and made it a lot like, it seems less efficient or something in there. Like,
they did change it. They moved the entry point to the room with the loading zone so that you don't enter the room right where you load. You kind of enter from the other end. So they moved some walls around. So, but I don't know, like, as far as efficiency.
Yeah. It just seems like you spend 30 minutes outside and then 20 seconds inside and then you're loaded. But the inside has a pretty big room that you can stand in. So.
Yeah. The real problem with it is the outside part, because most of the time it's backed up so that you're outside in the sun, and they have like some covering, you know, to kind of protect you from the sun, but not enough for like when it's a crowded day, you're just kind of standing in the middle of Tomorrowland.
Yeah.
Really hot.
Yeah.
If there's fans, they're not a lot of fans.
Mm-mm. No, they're not the good fans.
Yeah. And it's not like, like if they were able to use the space where the front of Monsters Inc. Laugh Floor was for the queue, that would be better because you'd be shaded the whole time. But that's where that attraction entrance is, so you can't move the queue over there. So they're kind of stuck on space.
Yeah. Next up, we have the Haunted Mansion.
Well, that seems controversial too.
Does it? So there's a couple of things here. One, it suffers from the outside, mostly outside, hot. And then the way they move the lines, the fans no longer cover the lines. The fans are the fans are now in the middle where like the stanchions are, not where the people are.
Yeah, because it used to be where you would just fill the available space and under the like the covered area at the beginning of the queue. But now that they've separated into actual lines, which I actually prefer the separate lines than like just fill in the space.
Yeah.
But yeah, the fans no longer point at the lines.
Yeah. So that's one bad. And then two, so I think the graveyard, the cemetery, is great. But then the biggest problem for me with the Haunted Mansion line is, all right, we're going to send giant crowds into this one room, one after the other, after the other, and then squeeze you down into a chute.
The very end of the queue.
Yeah.
Usually the end of the queues are the best part. Not so much.
That one is grab your group and push and shove type of place.
Yeah. It's literally a funnel down into a single file line. And again, I don't know how you would fix that necessarily, except having smaller groups or keeping it moving so that you're not just like shoved into this small space. And which,
yeah, it's, if it's that not, theater thing that's the,
yeah, if it's not a crowded day, then it's fine because you can just walk, you know, there's not enough people to where it becomes like a bottleneck. But on any normal kind of day, like it immediately becomes a bottleneck. And then the next theater door is open and then you have a whole nother group and it's just that whole room fills with people, yep, trying to like get squeezed into this one line.
Yeah. And they do it a little more successfully in Tower of Terror, which we'll talk about in the good cues. But yeah, just the dumping out of the big room and letting the big room empty in a big crowd and then trying to funnel down the two crowds. It's just, it's chaos.
I will say the Haunted Mansion queue is one of the attractions that has changed the most for the better over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Because back when it first opened in the 70s, like I even remember from one of my early trips, it wasn't covered at all outside. Like it was completely open where you were walking in front of the, you know, the facade of the mansion before, yeah, you go inside, and there was no graveyard. Like it was just kind of just like a normal queue. Then they added the cover and that was great. Then like in the late 90s, I think, they added the graveyard scene,
mm-hmm,
or maybe it was later. I honestly don't remember when that was added to like break up the, I guess, the monotony to kind of keep it interesting, and it seemed well. So yeah, they've done a lot of work to make the Haunted Mansion queue better because it's one of the more popular attractions, but yeah, they could do something on the inside.
Yep. All right. Next up is Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. Again, this, I guess, could be controversial, but one, a lot of it's outside. Two, they should have torn down that theater. The queue is incongruous with the show to me. Like,
but it's Hollywood.
Is it? But what does Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway have to do with Hollywood? Except for a loose, like, oh, you're in a cartoon.
Yeah. I mean, that's what the whole queue is cartoon posters, like for their shorts, and you're entering the cartoon.
Yeah.
But back in the day, you'd go to the theater to see the cartoons, like in old Hollywood.
Yeah, I guess. But I still don't like it. It doesn't seem right. It doesn't fit.
I would have thought your complaint would have been the outside part, not the inside part.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't just be like, it's hot for all of these.
You know what's interesting about the Runaway Railway queue is obviously that used to be the Great Movie Ride. And I remember waiting in line for the Great Movie Ride, but I don't remember like the queue being as like kind of full outside of the theater as it is now. Maybe it was. Maybe I just don't remember.
Well, that's why they tore down the Great Movie Ride.
Well, that, but also, you know, I remember when it was crowded for the Great Movie Ride. So the only thing I can think of is the Great Movie Ride. It was a people eater,
yep,
or a much greater people eater than the Runaway Railway. And I guess Runaway Railway is still pretty new. So,
yep, so it's popular.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. Next up is a class of of Q, and this is the, all right, everybody just jam into this big room and then we'll push you in. So this is your Muppet Vision 3D, your Pixar Film Festival. I think, except for the outside part, A Bug's Life is the same as this.
Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor.
Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor. The PhilharMagic.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these great attractions, but the queues, I just hate it. Like, just stand here in this room, awkwardly sit down or lean against the wall.
Right.
And we'll get to you when we get to you. It's like a waiting room at a doctor's office.
Yeah. And that's even like before the pandemic. Like now it's even worse because, you know, you just kind of have a built-in resistance to wanting to be smashed up, yeah, against strangers. But like even before that, it was just like, you know, honestly, it's hot. People smell. Like,
yeah,
you don't know these people. You don't want to be,
yeah,
jammed up against people you don't know. So yeah, I would agree for all that, mm-hmm, reason.
Okay.
All right. The next one that I don't agree with.
No.
But it's on the list, so we can talk about it, is Slinky Dog Dash. I think since they added the covering over the outside part, it's perfectly fine.
Yeah. I guess this is I put a question mark on this, and we don't have to belabor it, but it's another one that's hot. They didn't build any inside to this one.
Yeah.
They do have good fans.
They do.
And I like the detail in it. That's very cool. And the
The theming kind of overcomes like some of the discomfort.
Yeah.
If there is any. Yeah, I think the worst part of it would, like, if it had to be on this list, I would say it's when it extends out beyond, and you're just this huge line throughout Toy Story Land that goes all the way to almost...
they have those umbrellas.
Yeah, like, where you're just like, you can't wait till you move fast enough to get to the next umbrella so you're in the shade.
Yep.
But, you know, that's just...
And then some people stay in their shady spot and don't move ahead.
Keep moving.
Yeah.
Share your umbrella.
Seriously.
Get. But there's not much they can do about the queues when they get like too long where they have to, you know, extend outside the queue.
Yep. And then our final one is Dinosaur. And my main issue with this one is I think FastPass really broke this line, because it used to be in that little like museum or exhibit hall or whatever. They used up the entire room, and then, you know, they had different like shows and edutainment about, you know, dinosaurs and asteroids and all that kind of stuff. But with FastPass, it just turned that into just half the room, so you don't spend a lot of time in there, which is good, but then you know, you miss out a lot on that stuff. And then it also has the problem of the room dump into the funnel.
Yeah. And this is less about the queue, but they need to either redo or make the pre-show movie bigger. It's like this tiny screen in this room, and most of the time people are just talking over it.
Yeah.
And I think if the movie was like the screen was bigger and like it was louder, then like it would kind of force people to pay attention to it, or at least like be quiet, not so that people who haven't experienced the attraction can get the backstory.
Yep.
Like, they really need to spare no expense on that attraction. All right. Well, now that we've complained, why don't we talk about
the good ones.
The good ones, in our opinion.
Yeah.
So again, this is in no particular order. We'll start with Avatar's Flight of Passage in Pandora.
This one, I think, is my favorite one. Maybe. This could be the best queue, in my opinion. Kind of like what we were saying before, or what I was saying before, the rooms are big, they're well themed, but they're big so you can see where the end of the room is. And then there's always something intriguing just around the corner. So like, when you're in the main cave and then you go into that second cave is behind a wall, and you're like, ooh, what's behind that wall? Yeah.
And it's a really small cave compared to the first one.
And then when you go through the second cave,
there's a water fountain refilling station.
Yeah. Which and that is cool, so airlock thing.
Yeah.
And then they did a great job of the outside inside deal.
And let's not forget, this is one of the rare queues that has a bathroom in the middle of the queue.
Yeah, you can just go to the bathroom.
So convenient.
Yeah. Then there's a lab with all kinds of cool stuff in it.
Yeah.
And then and that's when you get to the back and forth room, which isn't that big. And then you go up the long weird hallway. But that is definitely one of my favorite queues. And even the outside part, they have good fans. Like, it's a very gentle, long walk up that mountain.
Yeah.
And they have very good fans.
And depending on what time of day you go, it may be shaded the whole time, depending on where the sun is. And, you know, unless there's something wrong with the attraction, like the time you're going on it, the line may be really long. But for the most part, you're kind of moving a lot. You're not just standing still and then moving. There's like a little standing still, obviously. But, like, it flows very well, again, unless the attraction goes down or they've reduced the number of theaters that are in rotation. But yeah, they did a great job with that queue. Actually, all the Pandora queues, I like the river journey queue is more traditional with the back and forth, but it's mostly covered or in the shade, and they have the really good fans there too.
Mm-hmm.
And the refillable water fountain in the middle of the queue is... or bottle filling station in the middle of the queue is very helpful.
Yep. Another thing about that queue is it has that break in the caves where there's a cast member like holding people until the next cave empties out.
Yeah.
So it's a great thing because you get really big bursts of movement in that one too.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's a really good cue.
All right. Next one on the list is, a lot of people may not like the attraction that much, but the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train cue is one of my favorites. Similarly to Flight of Passage, because, you know, it has an outdoor part, but it has a lot of fans. It's kind of sunk low under some tree coverage. So as long as you're like in the actual queue area, you know, you're not in direct sunlight. Now, if you're outside of the queue because it's extended, then yeah, you'll probably be in the sun. But it seems so well. And I really like seeing like the Dwarf's Cottage, and then they have like the games and the caves, and you can kind of see the different areas in the queue. So it's not your traditional back and forth, but you can kind of get a good idea of how long, you know, you have left, you know, before you get on the attraction. So I really like it mainly for the theming, but also I think it's laid out pretty well.
Yeah.
In the, you know, the kind of space that they have in the middle of Fantasyland.
Yeah. Yeah, this one I like that they, this was maybe the first one. Maybe it was Slinky Dog Dash. Wait, which one came first? Seven Dwarfs
Mine Train.
It was the first one that they started doing odd and even groups. Like they had like an odd, a line for odd groups and a line for even groups. So it helps them fill up the trains more. And I think that that is very cool.
That is. I forgot about that.
Yep. Next up we have, it is Tough to Be a Bug. And this is, for me, the outside part
yes.
is the thing that saves this one from everybody jam into this room and we'll get you when we get you.
Yeah. I will say about the room, the posters are cool, like the movie posters. But yeah, the outside part, walking around the tree and seeing the carvings up close, and you see carvings you can't see when you're not in the queue, and you're kind of below the, I don't know, it's really well done.
Yep.
Until you go to the inside part, then they did what they had to do, but like,
yeah, no cell signal in there either.
Yeah. Or Wi-Fi.
Or Wi-Fi. Yeah. Put some more access points in there.
You're just jammed in this room waiting.
Yeah. You're jammed in this room waiting, and we've over the years engineered the park where you don't need to, but it enhances the experience if you're actually on the phone, like booking things or looking at your lightning lanes or whatever. So get some more technology in there.
Yeah. All right. Our next top queue is the Dumbo queue. And mainly this has to do with the queue since they redid it. I guess it was part of New Fantasyland, the first kind of when they redid the whole circus area. They added the double Dumbos, and they have like the circus tent. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they're doing it right now with COVID precautions, but having like the playground inside, and you get like a pager.
Yeah.
Like, I think so that is cool. Such a good idea for families with young kids.
Yep.
To kind of just break up the monotony for an attraction that I would imagine most people going to Magic Kingdom for the first time go on Dumbo.
Yep.
So I thought that was such a good idea, and I haven't really seen it anywhere else that I can recall.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's very cool. I remember the first time we did it. I think it was with Holly and Stewart, and we had Ben with us. And it was the first time we did it, and we just sat in the bleachers and waited while Ben and Stewart and Holly played on the playground. And then when it was our time to go, it was like maybe a 10-minute wait after that. So like, I think overall it was probably closer to 30, 40 minutes, but it didn't feel like it at all. And it was a nice place to sit down. It was cool in the shade.
Yeah. Such a good idea.
Actual seats. Yeah. So good work, Dumbo retheme. All right. Next up we have the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror. I think the outside of this queue is really cool. Like, I think they did a great job with the theming and the sort of old Hollywood rundown, kind of abandoned.
Yeah, there's the soundtrack is like kind of creepy enough mm-hmm. without actually being creepy that it kind of gets you in the mindset before you even go into the hotel.
Yep. The lobby, when you get into the lobby scene, like there's so much in that room that nobody ever gets close to or sees, but it's just it's a very clear, like, sign of Disney quality where it's like, wow, they did all of that back there and they didn't have to. Like, they could have made this a back and forth and just put a couple of things across the wall, but it looks like this could have been a lobby of a nice hotel. So, and again, it has the pre-show theater with the dump into line, but the doorway coming out of the pre-show theater is a lot smaller, so it funnels down into just your groups, and then your group goes in a regular size line.
And then it splits into two, so it separate, you know, it keeps the line moving, so it's not backed up, so that when you come out of the pre-show room, you're not like immediately just hit with a wall of people.
Yep.
So I think that was a good design too. Yeah, and the inside part, like after the pre-show, like the theming in there, the sound, like there's a lot of bass, like the boiler room, like it's very atmospheric. The elevator's going, and it's one of the perfect cues, I think, that kind of builds the suspense in a way for the attraction, because you can't see anything of the actual attraction except where you get on. And I mean, when you're in the outside queue, you can hear like screams and stuff coming from and seeing the doors open. But like once you're inside, like you're in this hotel, and it's kind of building the suspense until you get onto your elevator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to, and it's hard for me to remember that when you're in the boiler room, you're on the same level that you walked in. Like,
right.
It feels like you went downstairs. It's kind of like Haunted Mansion. I feel like it's all in that. Like what you see in the park.
Right. You're just in the house.
Yeah.
Our next top one, and maybe it's just you and I don't know. I don't know if we've ever talked about anyone about this, but it's the Seas with Nemo and Friends queue.
Mm-hmm.
Just the beginning part. As soon as you walk inside from outside, like I really feel like I'm at the beach at night. Like it's dark enough where, like, I don't know. The smell, the air, like everything in that first room where it's like you're going back and forth, but you're in between the sand dunes. And like, I love that. After that, you know, you're just like walking forever until you actually get to this really short attraction. But that beginning part, I think
it's really cool.
Tops it for me.
I would like to have if I could have done the, I had a bar in the basement of my old house. And if I could have themed it like the inside queue of the Living Seas, I would have. Like that, like really you're in on a beach. The only complaint about that is it is real dark in there. And if you're on like a noon summer day in Florida going into that, you know, 10% lighting, you might fall down.
Yeah, another good thing about it in that first room, even though it's back and forth, is it's separated back and forth. So it's not like chain links. Like there's like sand dunes in between each back and forth. So it makes it nicer to kind of go through. You're a little more isolated from other groups. So you can kind of enjoy the theming more. So yeah, it's just oddly long after that where you're just walking and there's typically never anyone in line after that. So it's kind of funny, especially for such a short attraction. But that first room makes this enter my top queue list.
All right. Next up, we have Frozen Ever After. This one is fine to me. But again, it's the inside, but you feel like you're outside thing. So that's pretty cool. And I think the theming's good. But again, for me, it's more just a big room with back and forth in it.
Yeah, it is a big room with back and forth. But yeah. The fact that it's like the fake nighttime.
Yeah.
Like you're in this village and it's got like all the, I don't know, the Arendelle village set around it. And you got Oak and Shield coming on the intercom every now and then. And like it's compact enough that once you're inside, I've never really felt like claustrophobic in there. Like some cues when it's just like back and forth and you're in one room. I'm looking at you, Star Tours at Disneyland.
Oh yeah.
But you can also see where you get on. So like there's like you know where it ends.
Right.
There's not other rooms that you go into that are, so you don't know, like you think you just have this room and then you turn a corner and then you're in another room.
Yeah.
Again, I'm looking at you, Star Tours at Disneyland.
Rise of the Resistance.
But mainly, yeah, the theming for the nighttime outside, I think, pushes us into the top list for me.
Yep. Okay. Next up is Expedition Everest.
this is an interesting cue because, like, it's outside for a lot of it, but you're covered. There's like a small section that's not covered, but it's a there's a lot of cool things to look at for this, like, I don't know, expedition you're going on, like this Himalaya expedition. There's sounds and I don't know. It's really the theming, but also you're just you're constantly moving around. It's just laid out in a way where it doesn't feel like you're just going back and forth.
Yeah.
I typically don't wait in the line for Expedition Everest, but I have a lot recently because of COVID. And so I've got to kind of re-experience what it's like. Usually I just do the single rider.
Yeah.
Rider line.
It's kind of what you wish Jungle Cruise would be. Like,
yeah,
little different rooms and you're in the break room and you're in the this room and the that room. And, you know, where this is more serious, Jungle Cruise could have then jokes in each one of those rooms. So
yeah, that's a good point.
Yep. Next up we have Snuggler's Run. So for this one, the highlights are, obviously the Falcon, the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah. I mean, what a way to start your queue. It's like, even when it's outside the actual entry point of the queue, you're walking around the base of the Millennium Falcon. That unto itself, it doesn't matter what comes next in the queue. It's like, like the fact that that's the first thing in the queue and it's not even really part of the queue.
It's the outskirts of the queue.
Right.
It's what you can see from the queue.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I got a picture right here from underneath the Millennium Falcon.
Then you go into the hangar, which for people who enjoy playing with the things, it's like interactive. That's cool. And then you have the Hondo part, which that's very cool. But the best part is the load. Like
when once you're on the Falcon, like when they're separating with a chest room and
And even going up to that where they have the floors where it's like a,
Like you're on like a
jetway.
Yeah.
And then the load, like you go in and then you leave and there's nobody leaving when you go in.
Right. Yeah.
Like it's crazy.
Such a, if you haven't watched any videos or read about how the attraction actually works, I highly recommend it because it's very innovative and it's really cool how they figured out a way to make it so only your group is getting on the Millennium Falcon and only your group is getting off the Millennium Falcon. But really there's like, say 24 groups all loading onto a Millennium Falcon, you know, a couple minutes apart. Yep. So it's really cool.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. This next one, maybe it's controversial. I don't know. It's Peter Pan's flight. And it's only because of the addition to the queue they made, I don't know what, five years ago, however long, where they took over those Fantasyland bathrooms and kind of made an inside part of the queue that's exceptionally themed for Peter Pan, where you're going through the nursery and the outside of the Darling House. Before that, all it was a chain link back and forth in the front that would extend, you know, outside a lot. And I think that's really saved the queue because Peter Pan's flight, as we've talked about many times, and as most of you have probably experienced, always has a long wait.
Yep.
And the fact that they did something about that to make it more interesting, with some interactiveness, the fact that it's inside and the air conditioner for most of it.
It adds to the story. I mean, you get sprinkled with pixie dust before you go out to get on your ship. So like, that's how you're flying.
Yeah. It's it works really well. And I remember when it was happening, it was kind of a surprise. Like, I can't remember if we were podcasting at the time or not, or if it was before, but I remember just being like, when they finally opened it, it was like, oh, I thought they were just making like an overflow queue area. I didn't realize they were like theming.
Doing a whole thing with projection mapping and.
Yeah.
That is a queue that when they, so before they added that queue, I never would have waited in the queue for Peter Pan. We always did either fast pass or didn't do it. but since they've added the queue, I am more, open to waiting in line, especially like if none of the outside queue is filled and it's just inside, then definitely go. Cause it's like a 20 minute wait probably. And then, you get to see all the cool stuff.
Yeah.
So, All right, next up is Voyage of the Little Mermaid. I really like this queue. I think it is neat. It's you got your caves. You got some animatronics. You got some interactive areas.
Got some waterfalls.
Waterfalls. I just think they did a really good job with this. I wish the ride were longer, but I really like the queue. I feel like it's thematically very appropriate.
It's a very long queue, which does fill up. Like, mm-hmm. It's not wasted space. Most of the time when we're there, we haven't had to wait in practically anything on it, but I've seen it, you know.
Yeah, we've had to wait in that. There's like a round room where it tells the tale.
Yeah.
That we've had to wait in like once or twice, but
you can tell this is a modern like a more recent addition to the Magic Kingdom just by how large the queue is, especially for a Fantasyland attraction, because most of the queues there, like we just mentioned with Peter Pan, like originally were just really small, and they've tried to add more where they can. But since this attraction came later after they tore down 20,000 Leagues, they knew the popularity of Little Mermaid, mm-hmm. and you know they added enough queue and an interesting queue to kind of help with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder, I'd like to see a graph of the time versus the number of severe sunburns at Walt Disney World. Like, I feel like they've gone down. Like, I feel like they've, you know, pretty much all the new rides have like a good 45 minutes of inside queue.
Yeah.
So. All right. This one is, I put it on here, and I think it's nostalgia, because it's the opposite of what I've been saying for most everything else, is Splash Mountain. And I just remember maybe the first time I rode it was I think it was a high school band trip, and it was like nighttime when we rode it. It wasn't super full, but we were in the outside part, and like the ambiance back there is very nice. I think they're fireflies, but I'm not sure. So I just really like that queue. I think they do a good job. I don't want to wait in it when it's hot, but I think they do a good job. And then the grand finale of that queue is that line before, or that hallway before you turn to get onto the boats. Mm-hmm. And they have the best air conditioners in the world there in a very small room. Like, they have warehouse sized air conditioners in a hallway, and yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah. You turn in that hallway and you're hit with this icy cold air,
mm-hmm.
but also the smell of the water, which is, you know, a distinct thing at Disney World, mm-hmm. is any water-based attraction. It's like, you can smell it as soon as you're inside. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they change the queue at all for this when it's rethemed to Princess and the Frog.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or if it'll be laid out the same just with Princess and the Frog retheming, or if they'll actually like reconfigure any of it.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, and my next one, which also may be a nostalgia, is Pirates of the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. Obviously the inside part.
Even the outside part's nice. Like, it's not hot.
Yeah, it's like covered, but it's like really spacious most of the time, yeah. And there's fans, but
it's in some places there are nice breezeways at Disney World.
Yeah.
And this is one of them.
But for me, it's when you go inside the castle part.
Yep.
Or the old fort or whatever that thing is, like with the stone walls and the dungeons. I don't know, just the atmosphere in there, the smell of the water, just the music, like, this was like low Pirates of the Caribbean theme music, mm-hmm. playing. Like this takes me back to going on it as a little kid and stuff, where like I remember waiting in that line. I remember being in there. The queue was the loading area was different back then than it is now, but doesn't detract from the queue at all, which I really like. I feel like you can look down into the cell, and like, I don't know, it seems like there's something around every corner, mm-hmm. whether or not you can actually go there or not, but yeah, I've always loved that part of the queue.
Yeah, it's a good example of starting the story like at the beginning. Like, yeah, as soon as you get into the line, you're in the story.
Yeah.
And then our last one, take us home, Michael.
Yeah, I may be the only one with this one.
You may be.
I was looking online, and this is on a lot of people's bottom queue list, but and I don't think this is nostalgia. I really like the Big Thunder Mountain Railroad queue, since they've redid it a few years ago, because it used to be where the inside part was just one giant room of back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like you're kind of moving in different configurations. There's like things to look at, and
they've got some interactive stuff.
Yeah, it's not just a straight back and forth. It moves pretty quickly in there. The only thing I don't like about the queue is like the outside part because of the sun. But if it wasn't for like the sun, like the outside part looks really cool. Like I like going up the side of that mountain where you get a good view of like the river and like just the theming of Thunder Mountain itself before you actually see like the attraction itself.
Yep.
And I like how you go down into the, I don't know, like you go down into the loading area. So it's like you're going down into the mine.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. And the fact that there's two loading areas. So I've never had a problem waiting for Big Thunder Mountain, regardless of what the wait is, because I enjoy the queue a lot. But I know it's not everyone's favorite.
Yeah, for me, my major cons on that one would be they rely too much on the breezeway design of the queue, and there aren't enough fans. Like it's hot and still in there, and I don't like that. And then I also am not a huge fan of the load for that, where it's like going down into that sort of claustrophobic tunnel, and then the cast member's like, all right, the next 50 of you follow me and we'll see what happens.
Right.
Like it just seems very chaotic down there. But
yeah,
I like the theming, and I like the stuff that they added, and the interactive stuff, and the, like, I like all of that stuff. It's like they got 90% of the way there for me, but they just needed to go just a little more. And like, I know they can't do anything about the load at this point without a huge change, but, they could put some fans on there.
They could, especially in that claustrophobic part.
Yep. Fans and water fountains, people.
I also remember a lot of Big Thunder Mountain queue from years ago when I would go a lot, and I would be in the queue at nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
I could always see the Spectrum Magic Parade going down through Frontierland from inside the queue room. And it was really cool because it was so bright.
Yeah.
Or the parade was so bright, and you could still hear the music in there. So it was like, even though you were stuck in that room for however long, you just watch the parade, even though it was far away, you could still see it.
It's like a bonus.
Yeah.
Some bonus magic right there for you. All right. And that is it for our Wait For It attraction queue review at Walt Disney World. Okay, so you can check us out online. We're at tfppodcast.com. We're on Instagram and Reddit at /tfppodcast. We're on Twitter at @tfp_podcast. You can email us at info@tfppodcast.com. Subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcatcher. Check out shop.tfppodcast.com for all of your t-shirt needs. And we have some exclusive Patreon-only content that's available to you if you support the show at patreon.com/TFP podcast, including the relaunch of the book club. So if you want to get in on it, I'm supposed to put up a poll that I'm just remembering right now. So I will do that, and we'll start the book club again. That's all I got. Anything else?
There's only a 10-minute wait. Let's go get in line.
Woohoo! Thanks for listening. We'll see you real soon.